Hi, you guys. Welcome back. This is Lost Arts Radio, and I'm your host, Richard Sachs. And we have an exciting guest that I've been hoping we could get on. And that's Melissa Tate, who is an immigrant, a legal immigrant from Zimbabwe. And she's actually from an African country that most Americans don't know much about. And her experience is really valuable for several reasons that more than we really have time to get into here, but we'll do our best. And I think one of them is what happened to Zimbabwe, which used to be in really good shape before certain policies changed. And we'll get a chance to look at that a little bit. And then her experience in America with what's going on here with, you know, our rulers and the media trying to make us all into people worried about everything, including racism, which to me, I mean, it's so foreign. I don't even relate to people as different races, but as spirit. And these are our costumes. And then she's got a great book we want to talk about and have everybody buy. So that'll get us started and we'll see where it goes. So welcome, Melissa. Thanks for coming over. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Richard. I'm excited to be on the show.
Yeah, there's some really neat stuff to talk about. And one of them that we can't spend too much time on, but I think it's really important, is that Americans, most of us don't travel, especially now when it's getting really difficult to travel, but even mm-hmm. for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a lot of Americans just have a general impression of Africa as if it was a single country.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of countries in Africa. And one of them is Zimbabwe that's important for many reasons, partly because of the great example it was of prosperity and peace before, I guess, Mugabe took over and his gradual policies came into force. And it's relevant right now, not just for general knowledge of the rest of the world and geography, which would be really good for us all to have, but also because it's being implemented here mm-hmm. in a little bit different style, but similar. So what was Zimbabwe like before it had this problem?
So growing up in Zimbabwe, I mean, I never would have asked to grow up anywhere else. It was a beautiful country. I mean, it still is. I mean, it's a beautiful country either way, but, you know, it was just a peaceful country, successful country, thriving middle class. You know, we had expats who lived from all over the country. Like, I went to a school that was very popular with people from all over the world. So I went to school with people from Sweden, from Yugoslavia, from Australia, from all over the world, because it was just a great place to live. Right. And it was known as the breadbasket of Africa because it was where the agricultural hub through which food was exported all over Southern Africa.
Kind of a subtropical environment, or, you know, climate-wise?
Oh, perfect climate. I mean, they used to joke that Harare has the best weather in the world, which I think is true because it's like 82 degrees with no humidity. It's like perfect.
Wow.
Between 78 and 82 pretty much every day.
But you don't recommend moving there immediately at this point?
Not with the COVID situation right now.
Absolutely. Even without COVID? I mean,
No.
What changed briefly to make it not the ideal place to live?
Well, it was a gradual process. So now I look back at it, you know, as an adult and try to connect the dots of what was actually happening at the time.
Yeah.
But just reading historical accounts of what happened after independence. So Zimbabwe was a colony of the United Kingdom for a certain period of time. So we have a white population in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. So we did have years of colonization, and there was segregation and racism during that period. So there was a revolutionary war that overtook the colonial rule. So it overthrew the colonial rule.
Okay.
So President Mugabe became president. And at the time, he actually had a very open-minded way of looking at the situation. So he basically said that, you know, blacks and whites should live together in peace, and we should not look back at the colonial days, and we should only look forward and come
about
together.
What year was that independence started?
That was 1980.
Okay, pretty recent.
So yeah, so that was before I was born. So that's the culture that I grew up in Zimbabwe. There was no racial tension, anything that I would notice. You know, it was just black people and white people lived peacefully in Zimbabwe. We were Zimbabwean. Like, it was not like black versus white. It was just there's white Zimbabweans and there's black Zimbabweans, and we live peacefully together in the same country. And that's the Zimbabwe.
Like normal, right?
Yeah, it was normal. Yeah, exactly. So I grew up going to my friend's house, you know, who's white, and, you know, had played with them and had family over, and, you know,
right.
So it was perfectly normal. And then there was a shift that took place, I would say probably in the mid 90s. And because the president, he was already a self-proclaimed Marxist. So in the beginning, in reading historical accounts, he had initially kept the capitalist society in place in order to, you know, exploit it and use it for his own benefit.
Okay.
And, yeah. And then,
so it was always his plan, you think? He was just doing it slowly?
He was just doing it slowly. So in the 90s, he started to slowly implement more of a socialist, more of a communist type of society.
Okay.
And that crippled the economy and started to cause a lot of unemployment and hunger and certain, economic decline in the country. So it caused a lot of political turmoil for him, particularly with war veterans who started to revolt against the government because their pension funds were basically coming to nothing. And these were people that had fought in the Revolutionary War.
Right.
So basically at that point, they decided that they were going to turn the attention away from the government to the white farmers. I mean, and that's how I understood what took place there. So, you know, overnight, you know, white people and white farmers became the enemies of the country. And it was
so again, how did they make them overnight the enemy? I should
just through rhetoric. You know, the rhetoric changed. So the rhetoric changed from, you know, we're coming together, black and white, we're going to move forward, we're going to move past colonialism.
Yeah.
And then the rhetoric changed to the reason why, you know, you're poor, and the reason why things are falling apart in the country is because white people came to this country and stole your land, and they now own all these farms and the land, and they own everything, and you have nothing.
Do you think that could have been influence of people over Mugabe, or was it his own idea?
Well, you know, that's a good question.
You know, did he just spontaneously go crazy, or was he targeted as, let's take over this government like they are doing in the U.S. right now and turn it, you know, we'll use threats and promises and make the president change?
I wouldn't be surprised if the West had a hand in that, like maybe some Western influence.
Yeah.
So now that we look at how everything is not really coincidental, but I wouldn't really know to speak to that.
Yeah, because they could have said, you know, it would be too bad if something really bad happened to your family, but you'll make hundreds of millions of dollars and be secure if you just follow these speeches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very possible. I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, but in any case, he started fanning up racial tension and mm-hmm. division and stuff like that.
And at the time, the West actually condemned him for it.
Right.
So I don't know, but sometimes, you know, they play both sides. So who knows?
That's right.
So he
and
was
you were still there. You were still there at the time we're talking.
Yeah, I was still there. I was probably a teenager at the time.
Okay.
So So even the West imposed sanctions on the country, and that only made things worse. And
They know it will. I mean, anyone would understand that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like the whole sanction thing is usually meant to destroy the people, not the leaders, because it never affects the leaders. It always affects the local population.
Yeah.
Population, which it did. So a combination of the sanction, the Western sanctions, the seizure of private property and the farms, the commercial farms, which were driving the economy, the Zimbabwean economy.
So they just made sure of creating a disaster.
with the sanctions.
What's the language situation over there? What language are people speaking in Zimbabwe?
We have two native languages, Shona and Ndebele, and then we have, then English is the official language. So English is the official language that everybody learns. So when you start...
So you're fluent in three languages, basically, right?
No, I'm fluent in two.
Okay.
I don't speak the other language, the other native language. Yeah. So I speak English and Shona fluently.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Neat. So when did the economy start falling apart where the money became gradually worthless?
That would have been in 2000. It started around 2000
Okay.
Around 2000, and it just it started out gradual. So at one point, the Zimbabwean dollar was so strong that it was as strong as the British pound.
Wow,
this is probably in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then as time went by, I remember when I was younger, like one U.S. dollar was maybe something like maybe 8 Zimbabwean dollars.
So it had gone down quite a bit by then.
Yeah, it had gone by the time that I was kind of aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1:8. And then I remember in the year 2000, it started to be like 1:36. And everybody was like freaking out, like, oh my gosh, what is happening? Our currency is just devaluing against the US dollar. And this was before any of the actual economic turmoil actually hit. And then... and then it just became gradual. And then once that whole political upheaval happened, it just, the inflation just got ridiculous. I mean, it went from 1:36 to 1:5,000, 1:2 million, 1:100 billion, 1:1 trillion.
How much was Zimbabwe depending on imported material to survive?
Oh, everything was imported.
Okay.
So it was just ridiculous. Wow. So there was a period where we had nothing on the shelves because obviously we could not exchange our currency. So if you're a business, let's say you're trying to buy, you know, import goods, you have to get US dollars to import those goods because you can't use US dollars. You can't use Zimbabwean dollars to pay for something that is coming from out of the country.
So it just about cuts off all the supplies from outside.
It cuts off all the supplies, or it makes it really expensive because now, you know, you're looking at very high prices. So people would buy money on the black market because you can go to a bank. You can go to a bank and say, okay, here's, 100 Zimbabwean dollars. Can you give me US dollars in exchange? You couldn't do that because there was no money at the bank.
Where in that process did you get out?
Well, separately, I was, it's pretty, what would I say? It's pretty common for middle-class people to send their kids to study abroad. So I didn't come as a fleeing person because when I was living in Zimbabwe, even though we had an economic collapse, it wasn't like a situation that I was like fleeing. It was like just part of my normal course of life that I was going to go to university in the United States and possibly come back.
Right. But how could you not feel it if the money was not worth anything?
What do you mean feel it?
Well, you said it was something you weren't feeling, right?
Oh, no, we felt it. We felt it for sure. I mean, everything was collapsing around us, but it wasn't like a, this is what I was actually talking to my husband about. It wasn't like a complete breakdown of society where you have riots and, you know, people are shooting each other for food. It wasn't like that.
Oh, okay.
It was more of people were finding out that their, you know, life savings are now pretty much worthless and can just maybe buy them a bag of groceries, but you could still get things on the black market. So people were hustling, you know, it was just, and then we were going into the grocery store and it was harder to purchase things.
Right.
It was also very difficult for us to find fuel. So we would spend the night sleeping over in a fuel queue and so forth. So it was just, it was hard.
You were 19 when you left, right? And you were going to school in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people should watch your interview with Candace because that goes into a lot of detail about that. But if you can't get the money to buy food in the grocery store, What do you have to do to get a plane ticket when the money is crashing like that?
Oh, my goodness. That was a whole different thing. So because my mother is a woman of faith, you know, she was just believing by faith. So there was, in the natural, there was no way that I was coming to the United States to study. I mean, it was impossible.
Right.
But, you know, she's a woman of faith and she just trusted God would provide. And I think when you take that step of faith, God just starts to open up doors. And
yeah,
you start meeting the right people. And
it doesn't have to be logical.
No, it doesn't have to be logical. It was completely illogical. But literally the day before I was supposed to leave, because back then you could book your ticket and then your spot is reserved, but you didn't have to pay everything at the time that you book it. So I had booked my ticket in advance. I had my spot and my mom had been paying on it a little bit, but she didn't really have the kind of money to purchase the full ticket. And then eventually she just, you know, ran into a friend who actually was living outside of the country and was paid in US dollars. And she was able to give her US dollars to pay for the ticket literally the day before I was supposed to leave.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I arrived in the United States by faith with a suitcase, a borrowed coat, and $300 in my pocket.
Wow.
And I had to figure it out from there.
So faith was a requirement. You know.
Faith was a requirement. And, you know, in Africa, people live by faith because, you know, things are not as easy. So now I was telling my husband that I've become so Americanized because I was used to living by faith in Zimbabwe because things are so hard. You know, I went to a private school in Zimbabwe and my mom was a single mom. She took me to private school by faith. You know, every month she had to figure out how she was going to pay for my school fees. And God made it happen.
Just
somehow.
Figuring something is going to happen and make it possible.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I've always grown up living by faith and not by sight. But now that I'm in America, I feel like I now just live by, you know, whatever I see because, you know, things are great here, at least for now.
It's still actually by faith in a way. It's just that it's not so obvious.
Right, exactly.
Right, because if things weren't provided by some higher power like that, we wouldn't have anything.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I still live by faith, but not to the extent that, you know, I did back in Zimbabwe.
Not feeling on the edge of annihilation every minute, right?
Well, true. Now, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Now I feel like I need to go back to that walking by faith and living by faith.
Well, yeah. So things change in both countries. So what's a summation of how things are in Zimbabwe now?
Well, I mean, I can't really comment on it because I'm not there.
Right.
But, you know how it's been like everywhere with COVID, the COVID situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really involved in that because I've been an independent health scientist since 1965, and I've been watching what's been happening with the whole COVID thing. And, you know, it comes down to that decision that you've probably had to make too. Are you willing to say things that'll make you unpopular with everybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to be true to yourself. And that's one reason that I wanted to get to meet and talk to you is because I feel like you're a great example of that. And
yes,
you don't believe in the nonsense, you know, that people should fight each other based on the most ridiculous stuff, like how dark is your skin color?
Mm-hmm.
What country did you come from? What social class are you in? Things like that. Those are irrelevant.
Yes.
You know, it's like if you look at who you are, bodies come and go. They really don't last very long. That's like your temporary costume. And you have to look inside a person. Like, you were mentioning Martin Luther King's famous quote about the content of character with your talk with Candace Owens.
Uh-huh.
And it's like that. You have to, not even the surface of somebody's eyes, but what's behind them.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and when you are looking at people like that, you can't be racist or anything like that. You can't be prejudiced against anybody for anything because you have to look at who they are.
Right.
And with the whole COVID thing, it's become, for anybody that really would look past the headlines and the criminal fraud that's involved in it, there's no evidence that there's any virus involved at all, but there is a lot of evidence that there's a bioweapon paid for by the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
at levels above the president. And, you know, you talk a lot about Trump, and I've been excommunicated by both sides, the for and against, with Trump, because to me, it seems like he's a great person, you know, because of much of what he's done, an incredible courage to stand against the media, to come out endorsing a pro-life stance at a big convention, and wanting to make the country energy self-sufficient, which he did. But the whole Q movement, which is another week-long discussion, was saying he knows everything and he's just this ultimate wise leader. And they turned out to be misinformation, just like the media is on the other side. Mm-hmm. So that the Trump is a God people and the Trump is evil people were both taking the lazy way out of saying somebody is all good or all bad.
Right.
And it seems to me, honestly, that he's a great person because of how he stood against so many things that are false, against tremendous pressure for 5 years. Mm-hmm. But he made huge fatal mistakes, which he's not admitting at this point. Yeah. He's doubling down on them. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, I mean, mistakes that kill millions of people, pretty serious. Because the injections right now have nothing to do with preventing any diseases.
Yeah,
they're killing mass numbers of people with no benefit. And all these mask things and stuff like that. It's clearly to destroy the country. And it's international. And I wish we could get Trump to take the next step in personal development, which is a big one. Because the same ego strength that allowed him to stand against the media without failing is making it impossible for him to admit a mistake.
Yes.
And we need somebody good, you know, as a leader like that.
But that is so true. Yeah. I think one of his greatest strengths is also his biggest weaknesses.
Yeah. It's really hard to say, I'm sorry about killing millions of people thing. You know, I didn't really mean to.
We're in a tough spot right now because even though it is such a fatal mistake, I still feel like he is probably the one person that can probably win against, at least run and actually fight against. Because I hear a lot of people talk about DeSantis, and DeSantis is great, but I don't think he has the level of bravado it's going to take to really take this on.
Yeah, it's much more reserved. Much more reserved in his character.
Yes. So I still think that, you know, Trump is still the best horse we have. He's not definitely far from perfect, but I don't know. Who knows? I mean, God is in control. He may raise somebody else up. And
exactly.
But as far as I can see right now, that's pretty much.
Trump has the personality.
Person who has the guts to go up.
The courage, the guts, the charisma and everything are great. It's just that
the money, everything.
He's got a track record of trusting murderers, which is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he tends to hire them in his own cabinet, things like that. And it's not like in The Apprentice show where he could see right through everybody and just tell them they're fired. You know, his friends who have been in meetings with him say he lets these lawyers that are obviously against him just scream at him and tell him how stupid he is, and he just accepts it.
Really?
It's not like in The Apprentice, Patrick Bain was in one of them. Yeah, he's a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff the media said about him was false.
Mm-hmm.
And another mistake that's so big it really needs to be corrected is that Trump caved into the media pressure that Russia is evil. Well, Putin's probably the only remaining large-scale national leader that's trying to be family-oriented, non-GMO, organic food production, getting wireless radiation out of the classrooms, supporting non-interventionist political agendas and things like that.
Wow, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you listen to his speeches translated out of Russian, he's saying all the things that sound original.
Oh yeah, American. I listened to part of that speech. Yeah, that was very interesting.
It's all good, and he doesn't even use a teleprompter most of the time.
Yeah,
it's pretty striking. And Trump was told that if by his advisors, I think that if you're cooperative with Russia, it's going to prove you're a Russian agent and evil.
Mm.
That has to be reversed, because right now there's we're on the brink of war.
No, yeah. You know,
and Russia's not doing it, and all the media is saying Russia's attacking. The media is a big problem.
It really is.
Sorry for the long interlude, but
No, you're fine.
I would love to see Trump make a couple of corrections, if that's possible.
Yeah, that would be good.
Once you got here, you know, I wish we had a few more hours. Maybe you can come back at some point. But one of the issues that came up when you came here and you got into was the whole built on the racism idea that is being pushed on the American mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. It's not intrinsically coming from the mass of people. It's being engineered mm-hmm. through the media and the government agencies and things. And that's sometimes referred to as critical race theory.
Yes.
So what would you tell people that is?
Well, yeah, it is definitely manufactured, because when I came to the United States, 18 years ago, race wasn't even a topic.
Right.
You know, it wasn't even something that was anybody ever talked about. This is all very new. And by mm-hmm. new, I mean relatively new, because I started to notice it in the second term of Obama.
Yeah.
I started to notice the references, the division, the divisive language, and now looking back at it, I understand that he's a cultural Marxist, and that's what cultural Marxists do. And critical race theory is actually neo-Marxism. In researching for my book, is what I discovered, is that that's where it comes from. It comes from critical theory, which came from Karl Marx in Germany.
Right.
And basically it is divide and conquer race. Well, divide and conquer politics. You divide people into oppressed versus oppressor mm-hmm. in order to destabilize a country. So you see that happening here in the United States using race, whereas in other countries like in Russia, they used economics. So
yeah. Now, when you say Marxism, are you equating that with communism, or is there a difference?
No, it's pretty much the same.
Okay.
So So Marxism is communism. It's just Marx came up with a lot of the ideas of how to achieve it. So cultural Marxism is the use of culture, you know, as a means to get to communism. So for example, Black Lives Matter, they actually say they profess themselves to be Marxists.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're using culture. So you see how the culture in America has changed and has become very racial.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that they were so well funded.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, you know, the immediate question, who's doing this? Because mm-hmm. those guys were just reading a script.
Yes.
And getting really well paid for it.
Yes, I have a full chapter in my book where I follow the money, and basically it's not an organic organization. They do very little, if any. In fact, they don't do anything of substance for the Black community. They've raised billions of dollars, or hundreds of millions, and none of that money has actually gone to do anything that actually helps the Black community. There are no schools that have been built, or after school programs, or nothing like that. Most of it goes to things that are mostly geared towards far left causes, like abortion and LGBTQ stuff. And that's where most of the money goes. So really, it's just a front organization that is really controlled, that poses as anti-establishment, but really it is the establishment.
Right. So what's the establishment trying to do, and why?
Well, they're trying to racially use race as a way to divide and conquer America from within. So it causes a lot of destabilization. One of the things they're trying to do is to remove national identity. And these are things that communists do. For communism to work, first of all, they have to remove national identity. They have to remove your history. They have to remove your culture. They have to replace the idea of family. And if you look at Black Lives Matter, one of their stated goals is to destroy the black family.
You know, they actually put that in writing, didn't they?
They actually put that on their website, and when
Incredible.
Everybody made a big deal out of it, they deleted it. So
wow.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you wonder what the people are thinking who are the mouthpieces of it. I forget their names. A couple of women were in charge of it, I think.
Patrice Cullors is one of them. And she is actually on video stating that she is a cultural Marxist.
Yeah. So, you know, if she were ever in an honest conversation with somebody, it would be interesting to ask her, what are you going to get? Well, I guess we know what she was going to get from that. She's got huge mansions and plenty of money in the bank. But aside from that, why do you believe in that? What do you have any imagined idea what she would say?
You know what? That's the thing that I wonder, because I see a lot of these people that are going along with the system, and I wonder, are they just ignorant, or do they know and they feel like they have a seat at the table? So someone like Patrice Cullors, I can't tell whether she just really believes that, you know, Marxism and communism is going to be good for Black people and she's going to be fine, or if she's somebody who actually understands communism but feels like she has a seat at the table. So she's going to be one of the elites that's going to be exempt from the, you know, the shared poverty is what really Marxism is. So you have a tiny rich elite at the top, and then everybody else is equal, but they're equally poor.
They kind of forget to go into that detail for the public. But one of the famous slogans of communism is from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Have you heard that before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I don't remember if that was Marx or Lenin or who said that, but it's really famous. And the idea is that don't worry, there's no stress or pressure, no competition. Whatever you're good at, you can just contribute that. And whatever you need, the government will just give it to you. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are attracted to communism, students and things that are being trained to that now, because everything you need is going to be free. You know, and one aspect of that is the universal basic income idea, right? Yeah. Where, no, you don't earn any money anymore and you won't own anything, but you will be really happy, according to the World Economic Forum.
Right.
And, but everything you need will be brought to you by a drone and you won't have to pay for it and you'll just rent it all. But the only detail they forget to mention is that this is a new digital money system that they're coming up with now as they crash the US dollar like they did in Zimbabwe. And the idea is that you get your money, don't worry, you don't have to work or anything nasty like that. But if you don't believe the right thing, we'll just switch off your money for your benefit so that you'll learn what's acceptable.
Right.
Total control.
No, I mean, what we're seeing is a shifting from one economic type of system to another. You know, like you said, the Great Reset, and it's basically global communism is what it's going to be.
Exactly.
And they have already convinced, I feel like now they feel like they have convinced enough people to where they can put it into place, because they have spent all this time in education breaking down, you know, the American culture. So that's why I call it cultural Marxism, is you break the culture down, because American culture was all about hard work, you know, achievement and, you know, things like that. And now the culture is becoming this, you know, entitlement, the government owes me stuff. And the government is the solution for everything.
Exactly.
And you see this even amongst, you know, the Overton window has moved so far that even when you talk to, you know, conservatives, they still feel like, you know, it's the government should be doing this and whatnot. One of the things like education, it blows my mind that conservatives outsource education of their children to the government. That just blows my mind.
That's one of the biggest danger to children now is government and doctors, I would say, are the two biggest threats.
Yes.
You know, because in schools, I mean, if you put your hand your kids over to the government schools or even most private schools now, they're in mental and physical and emotional danger.
Yes, they are. Right. But I think education is one of the biggest responsibilities that we have as parents.
Parents, not the state.
Not the state. And I see that a lot of conservatives feel like the solution is going to harass the government to tell them to do what they want them to do. You know, like, we're going to go to the school boards. I'm like, just leave.
Look at the people that they find to be on the school boards.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know, you know, where they get those people.
It's like everything else. I mean, when you look at government in anything else, it is a disaster. So why would anyone think that education is any different? Because right. You look at government, you know, healthcare, you look at the government's handling of just, you know, the post office versus, you know, using FedEx or UPS. It's like night and day. It's the same with education, but now it's gotten so bad that, you know, it should be a priority for every conservative and Christian to get their kids out of this system. Maybe 4 years ago, I may not have been this, you know, harsh with my rhetoric against the public schools, but 4 years ago, they weren't teaching LGBT transgenderism. Now they are.
I know.
So it's no longer a safe place for your children to be in. They 4 years ago, they probably weren't teaching critical race theory, teaching your child that if they're white, they're evil, they're racist.
Yeah, we should have mentioned what critical race theory is really simple. If you're black, you're a victim. Mm-hmm. I mean, black and white, I think those are ridiculous terms because I've never run into a person who's white or black. Mm-hmm. There are all these different shades of colors, you know,
yeah.
But they have to make them opposites. So they have to fight, right? Mm-hmm. And critical race theory is you're one of these two opposite groups, either the victim or the evil people. Yes. And you have to hate each other. Ready, go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's what they're teaching in schools now. I mean, this is very new. It's probably, I would say, maybe the last 4 years, particularly after 2020 with the George Floyd thing. They just use that as a way to put it into the entire school curriculum, even in ways that are very subtle that you may not even catch because, you know, you have some parents who say, well, my school is not really doing that. But in very subtle ways, they've already started that indoctrination of critical race theory.
So it's really, at this point, too dangerous to have your kids in those schools, right?
Yes. Yes, I would say that.
So what do you tell parents to do if they see that and are working 40 hours a day and don't know what to do?
Well, if they're a person of faith, I would say, you know, they need to trust the Lord. You know, when I speak, I'm mostly speaking to Christians and conservatives.
Okay.
Because I feel like if we're going to change the country, we can't change the devil. We can't change what the devil's doing. The devil's always going to do what he's doing. But it's when we change, it's when we start to make changes in our own lives as Christians that things begin to change. So we have to start with ourselves, start with our own children and saying, you know what, Lord, I need to get my kid out of the public school system. I'm going to put my trust in you. And I'm speaking as somebody who does it. You know, it's a sacrifice. You know, my kids go to a Christian private school.
Which you still have to stay in touch with.
Which you still have to be very, just putting them in a Christian school is not the end of it. You have to be involved in your children's education and you have to stay on top of it because they were actually at a school where, you know, they started trying to bring in this critical race theory stuff and we had to nip it in the bud.
Wow.
And we had to rise up as parents. And eventually, I mean, we were able to root it out, but, you know, some parents were threatening to leave the school, but you have a lot more leverage when you're in a Christian school to do stuff like that. But if you're in a public school.
As long as you stay in touch with it and stay in charge. I would say, as far as, you know, speaking to Christians and conservatives, none of the kids really deserve to be abused, right? And if they get born into a family with whatever religion, they're still victimized by the schools. I would just put it a little bit more broadly maybe and say, only for the parents that care about their kids.
Yes, yes, right. Absolutely.
Whatever religion they might be.
No, I mean, I would love for every kid in America to be out of the public school system. But I'm like, the low-hanging fruit right now is a conservative and a Christian who knows what's going on in these schools.
Yeah, because at least they have a belief in that direction that you're supposed to take care of your kids and things like
that. Right, exactly. So I'm just dealing with the low-hanging fruit. But I mean, ultimately, if I could have it my way, I would shut down the entire public school system and start a private school system that is, that is actually more diverse with different ways of schooling, because this has been like a one size fits all, just like with everything government, you know.
Right.
Government healthcare is one size fits all. Everything is one size fits all with government. So there's so many different types of education that, you know, children can have. And then also having just patriotic education that gets kids to understand what America is all about. And that's one of the biggest tragedies of the public school systems, is this entire generation don't even know what it means to be an American and what a blessing it is.
Right.
As somebody who comes from outside of the country, who has lived in a third world country, who has lived outside of what America is and lived in America, I can tell you that you live in the best country in the entire world.
Yeah.
Probably the best country in history.
And certainly in the known history, because if you go back over a few thousand years of history, mm-hmm. it's a history of wars and oppression.
Yeah.
Not just of Black people, but of everybody.
Of everybody, yeah.
And they're trying to do it again now in a really serious way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
This is like an opportunity and a kind of a turning point, right?
It is a turning point, and it's actually scary to watch what's going on and know that, you know, if America falls, then there's really nowhere else to run to.
Yeah. So. It's not that the people in America were ever perfectly living up to the ideals, but the ideals were put on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everybody is kind of a divine being made by God with certain rights that, because they come from God, they can't be taken away.
Yes.
You can't make a law. In fact, and this is, I'm watching the time carefully because I'm not going to keep you too long.
No worries. But,
you know, you can't have an emergency that justifies taking away unalienable rights.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the pandemic were real, and it wasn't a bioweapon like it is, if it was a real virus, if that actually existed in this situation, which it hasn't been shown to, mm-hmm. you still can't take away people's rights. You could say, look, 90% of you are probably going to die according to our figures, and we recommend that you hide in your bathroom for 2 years, but they can't make you do it.
They can't, yeah, because the rights come from God.
There's no emergency great enough to do that.
There is no emergency. You're absolutely right. That is so true. But, you know, and that's that basic premise that you just mentioned, that one thing that makes America unique and exceptional and why it's the greatest country on earth, because of that basic principle that you're an individual, a spiritual being created by God, and you have rights that have been given to you by your creator. And no one can tell you what to do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Nobody and no government.
Right.
And I think that's been forgotten. And one of the reasons it could be forgotten is that they haven't taught what they used to call civics in school for generations.
Mm-hmm. And that was deliberate.
Yeah. And in the founding documents of America, they said that these are not just like a chosen people and rights for you alone. Mm-hmm. This is rights for everybody.
Right.
You could be born on the moon and you're still from God.
Yes.
You know, you have the same rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was individual countries cooperating ideally with those same rights of all the people. And I think when the UN was founded in 45, I think it was, or was it right after that? I think it was 45. And, they said this is the ideal principle of everybody cooperating, but they changed it from individual countries to world citizenship. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to push toward world government right now. with the illusion that it's everybody cooperating and being happy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and the crazy thing is I used to read about all of this because as a child growing up, I used to be really fascinated with the end times, you know, theology. Mm, I used to love reading the book of Revelations, and I always pictured like it was a distant time in the future that I wouldn't even be around to witness.
Right.
So it's crazy now watching it actually take place in my lifetime. And I'm like,
it is.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and I just
that's
don't
how
wanna...
I was able to recognize it.
I don't want to assume that we're out of chances at this point to make things yes. better now, because when it's all over, fine, that, you know, it can be all over and we, everybody mm-hmm. can be fine, but we don't have an absolute, I don't think, time guarantee of exactly no. what year, what happens.
Right.
So as long as we're, today we're alive and we're still on this planet in physical bodies, it seems like everything we can do, we should do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't feel that, you know, this is the end, you know, as they call it.
We'll know when it's the end because we won't be here anymore.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. I still feel like it's a battle between good versus evil. And one thing that gives me hope is that this country was founded on by people who dedicated this country to the Lord. And because of that, I believe that the Lord will honor that covenant and will intervene, because that's the one thing that's going to save us is divine intervention from the Lord.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
it's hard to see much else that would do it at this point. But, you know, even if we have a microscopic chance of turning things around on our side, agreements, you know, covenants and things like that, they usually have two sides. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to be upholding our part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So, and I think it's too easy to demonize whatever the other side is. And what it looks like to me is massive mind control and hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people who believe in critical race theory and believe in your border should be open to be diverse, even if it destroys your country, it's the non-racist thing to do. I mean, really insane ideas like that.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath all of their crazy programming, they're actually human beings that come from God.
Yes.
And if you can communicate with them at that level, I don't know. I don't know whether it'll work or not, but I'd like to see us try.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, because sometimes we forget that, you know, these are people that are really just victims at the end of the day, victims of some
I think so.
Serious mind control.
I think that's a brilliant insight that mm-hmm. the apparent villains, and I've actually applied this all the way up to the top of the power structure, human and non-human, and I look at every level, I don't see intrinsic evil. It's like under all of that programming, which can be really horrible, mm-hmm. obviously, to the point where you can't communicate on a human level because they'll just eat you.
Yeah.
Underneath that, like a prisoner in this huge tower that's got multiple walls around it and everything, mm-hmm. is still spirit.
Yeah.
And I think we can get strong enough to reach it. I don't know until we do, but
mm-hmm.
that's the only way I can see to stop this situation is defections from the bad side.
Yes. And that's what I'm praying for, that there's just, because the Bible does say that there will be an end time, you know, awakening and revival. So
yeah.
I feel like we're at the beginning of that, because I'm starting to see a lot of people that were very deep into the mind control are starting to break out of it. You know, people that are very prominent, you know, people like mm-hmm. Joe Rogan, people like
yeah.
Elon Musk.
Yeah. You know, Elon, I'd like to see Elon apologize for the satellite thing about radiating the earth with 5G from space. I think it'd be good to kind of undo that.
Well, Elon is definitely, I wouldn't say he's on our side. I would just say that I don't see him as somebody who's evil. I see him as somebody who thinks that technology is the answer, because he's very much into technology.
Yeah.
He doesn't see God as the answer like we do, because we're believers. Right. He sees technology as the answer to the evil and everything that we're seeing. So he thinks, okay, they're going to have AI and all these things. So the solution is we also need to merge with machines so we can compete with the AI and so forth.
Go to the mall and get a brain chip for your
kid. Exactly. And he just sees that as his solution. So I don't completely shut him off, because he's been really vocal about a lot of things that are important.
And he doesn't have to give up technology. He could just understand technology can be made human friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be antagonistic. I mean, brain chip technology is really not the only way to go.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I think some of these divisions, it's just because people are fighting over semantics. Like on the leftist side, a lot of them think they believe in environmental causes.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see that it's being twisted into an enslavement tool.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean there's no real environmental concern.
Right.
You know, you don't have to fill up the ocean with plastic and spent masks. That shouldn't depend on whether you're right or left about that.
Right.
Everything could be made recyclable.
Yeah, that's true.
Stuff like that. So maybe we have common ground.
We do.
So with the people that are thinking that critical race, well, I'm looking at both critical race theory and what you were describing as the Marxism agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the reason that people fall for the Marxism is they think it's going to end the evil capitalism and the evil rich people and give everybody everything free.
Mm-mm, no.
Did they fall for that in Zimbabwe, or did it just get imposed on them?
You know what? I think there was a big segment of the population that did fall for it. So I think it was a combination.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when it's being sold, it sounds great. You know, I mean, it's like, we're going to take, you know, from these oppressive people and give it to these people, you know.
Exactly.
So it sounds great because, you know, it sounds like an injustice is being.
The but evil then rich nobody people thinks stole of everything.
What's that?
We're being told that the evil rich people stole everything, and that's the problem.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like people then just use emotion and don't think 2, 3, 4 steps ahead. Like, okay, so if we seize this from, you know, let's say the rich people, which mm-hmm. is what they were doing in France, they basically said anyone who makes $1 million or more, we're going to tax 100% of anything above $1 million. So what does that do? Rich people are going to leave. You know, so they leave, but then what that does is it collapses the economy, because those rich people were employing a lower level class, maybe just slightly lower than they are. The lawyers, they're, you know, engineers, they're architects, you know, that level.
Yeah.
And then those people are now also employing a lower level, maybe the service class. You know, so there's like levels of the economy that are completely affected by removing these so-called rich people that you hate. You know, either they leave or you want them to just go away, but they're actually part of the functioning society of that capitalist system. Yeah. And I think capitalism has been conflated with crony capitalism, which is what every time I hear people describe why they hate capitalism, they're describing crony capitalism, where, you know, governments and mega corporations come
not
together.
Not a real free market.
It's not a real free market. And that's what we have in America. We don't have a purely capitalist society. We have a very crony capitalist society. And now it's becoming more in view now as we see the way big pharma and big tech and you know, all these big corporations now interact with the government, and they're now just becoming, they're basically merged before our very eyes and are now working as the same type of entity. And that's the kind of capitalism that we want to get away from.
Yeah, and it's something different. And you can see right now, as far as the money system goes, there's a quick project in force to destroy the money completely.
Mm-hmm.
All you do, in fact, just printing it in unlimited volume would do that.
Yeah.
But if you do that in conjunction with shutting down production, which they've used COVID as an excuse to do, you get quicker, massive hyperinflation.
Yes, and that's exactly what happened in Zimbabwe too. You know, massive printing, massive spending. So you're just seeing the same thing play out over here, you know. And like you said, now you take away the production and also the war on energy that is being waged right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
You put those three things together, it's not going to be pretty.
No, I guess they're saying to the people that don't think much about it, that this is to save the environment, right? Mm-hmm. That's why the evil oil is being shut down.
Yes, but they don't tell people that what is the consequence of that.
Yeah, you just starve to death, but you do save the world, except you don't really save anything.
You save... It is going to cause a lot of poverty and starvation and devastation. And the reason why a third world country is a third world country is because of a lack of energy.
Yeah, and that's one good thing that Trump did too.
Yeah,
is he made the country energy self-sufficient.
That's how you create wealth, is energy.
Yeah, I think that was great.
Yeah.
You know, and the solar and wind is not at a state to take over at all right now. That's a way to crash everything. Now, there are much more advanced energy technologies that are clean, and they're all suppressed. Mm-hmm. And people that try to bring them out get killed.
Yes.
You know, engines run on water. That's been demonstrated. And
really?
An inventor, yeah, all over the country. There's a guy named, I don't want to monopolize the last few minutes, but this is interesting. There's a man named Stanley Meyer who figured out how to separate hydrogen from oxygen, which is well known, but he did it with less energy. So that the net was positive. And he did that under the hood of a car and drove all over the country in what's called a dune buggy on just water.
Wow.
So he was killed and all his technology was stolen. So it's not a lack of research. That's all known.
Well, I know Nikola Tesla came up with some sort of an energy source.
Right.
That, you know,
sometimes called zero point or... There's a lot of technologies developed around permanent magnets. You're not allowed to do anything with that. Wow. And it's the same people suppressing the real health information,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially now about vaccines. And when I did the research on vaccines back to their start in the UK in 1796, there's actually no evidence that they've ever prevented diseases at all.
Wow.
Which is generally unknown. And so there's a cartel in charge that's way above energy and even above banking, using banking and energy and things. Mm-hmm. And they're, from a religious point of view, and this is one I happen to agree with, they're performing a ceremonial sacrifice of the biosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we have some time is they have a protocol. And if they don't do the steps right, they think they don't get the reward because mm-hmm. they have the technology to kill us overnight and they're not doing that.
Wow.
It's systematic.
That's what I wondered, because my husband and I have had this discussion, like, these people could literally just turn off the lights today and completely destroy everybody. Oh, so what
That's
are
right.
they waiting for? Let's do it.
They could put EMPs all over the world.
Yeah.
Electromagnetic pulse and shut off the entire electric grid worldwide tomorrow.
Yes. And people would be dead within a week.
Yeah. They are clearly not doing that.
So why do you think that is? That's very interesting to me, because that's what I've always wondered, because I figured out how powerful they are, how they're able to do all these things. But I wonder, like, what is stopping them from just getting it done? You know, the goal. I mean,
you'll forgive me if we run a couple minutes over, right?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm actually fine till about, 12:45-ish. Yeah.
Okay, so we're all right. Because I think this is kind of important stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm counting on us to do the most we can to reverse this thing.
Yeah.
And it's highly coordinated right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's coordinated from the top, which is not human. But
yes.
the non-human level is controlling the top families that control the banks and other things below them.
Mm-hmm.
And each level is given a different motive.
Yes.
Because the ones down below... At the bottom, like in the universities where they're learning to kill people with public health and stuff like that, they believe that they're saving the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're mostly really good people. Yeah. They don't know that they're going crazy.
Yep, that's true.
Above that, at the levels of corporate rulership, is money and power.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really know about the population reduction too much.
Okay.
The top level and the bankers do know about it. Mm-hmm. And they think that they're going to be in the elite remnant.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to have the world as their playground. And they believe in the Georgia Guidestones, mm-hmm. that 10, you know, half a billion people will be left.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that'll certainly include them in ruler positions.
Yeah.
Above that, they know none of that's true. And that it's a total extermination plan. And it's satanic. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense of memorizing some satanic scripture, but for real satanic, where they contact non-human entities that are very mm-hmm. dark, and they tell them what to do. And we've had wow. people that can attest to that in personal experience. And that's the top levels. And I think what they're doing, and I'm not infallible on any of this, I could be wrong, but mm-hmm. I spent many decades digging into it. And yeah. what I think is happening is that they are going by the doctrine of sacrifice, which says you find an innocent being, animal, person, dove, virgin, child, great mm-hmm. spiritual teacher, whoever is innocent, and you kill them, but not, you don't just come up and shoot them. Mm-hmm. You do a protocol and a system where you gradually destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if it's an animal, you cut their throat the right way and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they think that that makes God really happy, mm-hmm. especially if it's a very innocent being, and you get spiritual rewards. And right. these guys said, wow, that's right up our alley. It sounds great.
Yeah.
Maximum suffering, all these rewards. And they're do. And what would be the biggest ceremonial sacrifice they could do? Oh, yeah, the whole biosphere. So the sacrificial animal is all life on the planet, including themselves, a suicide mission.
Wow.
And for obvious reasons, they don't bring everybody into that understanding
mm-hmm.
because it might damage morale of their servants.
Yeah.
Right? To know,
yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. We're supposed to be the ones left, right? And so I think that's what they know at the top, and that's what they're doing. And they're accelerating now because of the organization and the fact that they feel like they're near victory.
Mm.
But they have a weak spot, which was my interest in. All right, how did you see the Star Wars movies?
No, I haven't.
The original ones were pretty symbolic and interesting.
Which ones? The new ones?
No, the new ones probably have all kinds of propaganda and brainwashing.
Okay. You mean the original
three is a
okay.
trilogy. Yeah, there was this space station, this big malevolent space station called the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to blow up planets. That was its big mission in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it had one weak spot. And if they could shoot some kind of a weapon into that spot, the whole thing would be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's how I see the cartel that's in charge of the world right now.
Yes.
And I think their weak spot is exploitable by us, but it's a certain internal state that we have to get to, which happens to be what we're supposed to do anyway, you know, which brings us into harmony with God, not in a mm-hmm. memorized belief system, but for real,
mm-hmm.
experiencing yourself as made in the image of God and letting it flow through you in a certain way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look religious as much as spiritual, meaning in touch with who you and your source really are. And
yeah.
I think that's their biggest fear. And so there are ways to do that that are, I think, really important, you know,
yes.
for those reasons. And that's yeah. the biggest fear of the power structure. So they have to keep us unconscious
mm-hmm.
of who we really are and prevent that until the protocol for the sacrifice is finished.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I see, you know, when they plan on eliminating life, because
wow.
they think they'll get the reward on a non-physical plane.
Wow.
That so is... just, you know, so far, that's my impression of it. But because of that, I'm interested in things we can specifically do. And it's not instead of, you know, education physically and writing mm-hmm. the books and doing all this great stuff. It's at the same time. An inner state of awareness.
Yes.
Not a belief system, because there's so many beliefs and people are still running the same antagonistic propaganda in their own minds, which is spreading mm-hmm. around. It's changing what your mind is doing. So anyway, we'll see. It's just talk until it's demonstrated. But that's what I'd like to see happen.
Well, that's a really insightful way of looking at it. Very interesting.
Anytime you get interested in that, you know, I'll share with you whatever you want.
Okay.
Because there are specific things that can be done with it.
Okay.
Or with anybody listening. But what I'd really like to focus on for a couple minutes now before we do the separate group session is your book. Because I want to know more the essence of what it steps through and what would be good for people to get from it when they read it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So the book basically breaks down what is going on with race in America. So it is a way for people to understand it. So I wrote it so that people can, you know, spread the word with it, you know, and talk to other people. So I actually had somebody reach out to me. They sent out an email to me and she said that she had never heard of me. Her neighbor gave her one of my books and she read it.
Okay.
So she felt compelled to send me an email. So she went on my website, looked me up, went on my website, sent me an email. She said that when all this stuff was happening, you know, with the George Floyd tragedy and how people reacted to it and all of this stuff, and, you know, all the fallout that happened from that, she said she felt like, you know, she's not a racist person. She loves everybody.
Uh-huh.
In fact, she mentions that, you know, one of her granddaughters is half black. So she's got absolutely no problems with race. She just sees everybody like you and I do, you know, sees people for who they truly are. But she said that when she started to hear these things that were happening, it felt wrong to her, but she couldn't put her finger on it. Because, you know, you and I, we keep up with politics.
Uh-huh.
We know what's going on. We're awake. But for the average person, you know, who just goes about their life, they're really just concerned about, you know, going to work, feeding their kids, you know, taking a vacation a year, watching football.
Yeah.
You know, that's the average person. They're not like interested in like getting in deep into politics and, you know, analyzing things like we are, you know.
They're trusting so that those people are doing a good job.
Right. So they have outsourced their way of looking at the word to just maybe turning on the news for 30 minutes a day, CBS, ABC, or whatever. And whatever they hear from that is their perception of the world. You know, that 30 minutes a day that they just tune into the news. And that's the average American, you know.
That's true.
And unfortunately, that, you know, short 30 minutes or an hour of whatever news or maybe now it's seeing it on social media. Most of that is fed from, you know, the people we've been talking about, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. It's programming.
Yes, it's programming. So she was not a political person. You know, she's just living her life. Then this happens. And obviously she feels, you know, like, okay, I want to help black people, because she's being told that because she's white,
okay,
she's the reason why black people are suffering. I mean, that was the narrative that was put out there.
The police are hunting them down everywhere and just killing them all.
Right. So she has a duty now to apologize and feel guilty and blah, blah, blah. So that's the message that was put out to the average person who doesn't really pay attention to all these things.
Okay.
So when she got the book, she said that it completely made her understand why she felt so uncomfortable about what was happening in the country. Because she didn't feel like she felt like she needed to feel guilty or, you know, and all those feelings.
Right.
So for her, it was a way for her to understand what is really going on, what is behind all of this that is happening, and to be able to connect the dots. Because a lot of these things that are happening in the world, they just seem like they're just random things that are just happening and they're all organic and so forth. So the book, what it really does is it makes you understand that all these things that are happening, they're not organic and they're not random. These are things that are being orchestrated for an end.
Right.
So I really wanted to write a book that was simple enough for even a 15-year-old to read and understand and be able to connect those dots so that they can understand what the bigger agenda is without even going into any of the conspiracy, you know, deep stuff that we've been talking about, just talking about it from a basic level of what's really going on, things that are verifiable. So I talk about how, you know, Black Lives Matter is not an organization that does anything for the Black community. It's actually a self-professed Marxist organization that is hell-bent on breaking down the Black family, which is one thing that has completely, that is actually a true reason why the Black community is falling apart, is because of the breakdown of the family.
And so now we are getting some equality now because they're breaking down everybody else's family too.
They're breaking down everybody else's family. So they started out with the Black community. Now it's moving on to everybody else. Yeah. And you're starting to see the same issues that you've seen in the Black community are now happening in white communities, Hispanic, and everybody else. Why? Because of this breakdown of the family. Yeah. So this is, these are the kinds of things I talk about. And I go back to history and talk about how, you know, the Black community post-slavery and before the 1960s was actually thriving at a time when white supremacy and racism actually existed. And the reason why they were thriving was because they couldn't depend on government. They had to create their own systems. As a Black person, you couldn't go to a white dentist.
Right.
As a Black person, you couldn't go to a white theater. So they had to build their own theaters. They had to have their own dental schools, their own universities, their own. And they built all of that. And they were successful. And they had their families intact. And what happened in the 60s is that the Democrat Party, which is the party of slavery and the KKK and Jim Crow, they
That's not commonly known, by the way.
It's not commonly known, but I talk about it in my book, and a lot of people are waking up to this, like, well, I didn't even know that.
Right.
So then you understand that, you know, the Democrat Party wanted to use the Black community to weaponize them for their own political gain. So they introduced welfare and all these things that were incentivized single motherhood, which eventually rendered the Black man irrelevant. So now the Black woman is not marrying the Black man. She's marrying the government. The Black man is no longer the provider of his family. He's now irrelevant. He's put in the school to prison pipeline, which, you know, the schools are completely run by the Democrat Party. Yeah. So I explain all these things to say, okay, you may think you're not helping any Black person by feeling guilty and giving money to Black Lives Matter, all these things that the system is telling you to do out of guilt. If these people truly cared about the Black people, they would completely change the school system, because that's where they're failing them right now.
Right.
Because Black kids are graduating not knowing how to read at a third grade level, sometimes even kindergarten. So they're set up for failure from day one. And who's running this system? The very people that pretend and bow and kneel and do all of these things. So so the book, I just wanted to kind of lay all of that out, because I know this because I follow politics. I'm a bit of a political geek. But seeing the ignorance that was around me at the time, I mean, the thing that pushed me to the edge to write a book, because I have never thought about writing a book.
Okay.
But what really pushed me to the edge was seeing my own pastor that I had been under, you know, for years and served and all of that, writing about his white privilege on social media and putting Black Lives Matter decals on the church window.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it.
That's actually not uncommon in a lot of churches.
It's not uncommon. Yeah. And this, it wasn't just him. I mean, ministries, evangelical ministries that I have given to and supported and followed, they were all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I realized it was out of ignorance. So I wrote the book so that I could hopefully get it into the hands of as many people as possible so they can read it and understand what is really going on and not to fall for, you know, the false narratives that are being fed to them.
So now, it'd be great to get it into the hands of all the heads of those churches too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that I've been doing that. I've been giving my book to, you know, pastors, to heads of schools, even, you know, churches. I had a lady that bought like 100 books and she's giving them to like schools and, you know, people in ministry and so forth.
Good.
I had a church buy the book for all their staff at their church. Because, you know, even in the church, the stuff is you know, festering in there. And it's so easy for the church to latch on to something like that because it seems like a virtue. You know,
it's got brilliant PR.
It does.
I mean, you know, if you don't support all these causes, then you don't care about oppressed people.
Right, exactly. And so many Christians are falling for it. And I just wanted to get that information out as somebody who, you know, with my background coming from Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Going through pretty much the same type of CRT rhetoric in my country, which led to, you know, complete collapse of the economy, and seeing it happen here, just drawing on my experience, you know, coming from Zimbabwe, also my experience coming here as a Black person with nothing and being able to succeed and go to school and work hard and live the American dream, start a business with absolutely nothing stopping me. The color of my skin had absolutely no.
you want to mention what kind of business you started?
It was actually an e-commerce, and it was at a time when e-commerce was really beginning to take off. So it was like getting in at the right time. It was the Lord, I have to tell you, because it just so happened that right at the time when people were starting to get comfortable with buying things online is when I just got this idea to put beauty products online. So my business just took off like a rocket. I mean, at the time I was working in corporate America for a major bank and as an investment advisor, but part-time I had this passion that I was always wanted to be a business owner because my mom is an entrepreneur. So I've always grown up around, you know, somebody who was in business, you know?
Yeah. Create something yourself.
Yeah, doing something for myself. And I hated the, you know, 9 to 5 and having the just the whole corporate culture. So I always knew that I was going to want to be out of it. But I was like, well, you know, I probably need to. And I thought I was just starting my own little business that I could just do while I was having children. And then it just like blew up. And
that's one of the reasons those people who do independent creative businesses are called the evil rich people. To make sure that nobody realizes they could do that. Early America was mostly independent farms and businesses.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that business still going?
I actually sold the business because now that I am very much involved in politics and being outspoken, this really became my passion. I mean, I started this business like 13 years ago. So I've definitely evolved as a person. The things that I cared about back then, you know, I wasn't really, I had no kids for one thing. I was very much into the beauty industry and modeling and all those things. And that's who I was. But, you know, getting older, having children, my priorities have changed. And now being involved, seeing what's going on and being involved in politics, I just couldn't, you know, put my passion into that anymore.
Yeah.
I eventually sold the business because it, you know, I was now more focused on trying to do what the Lord is calling me to do, whatever he's doing in this season.
So what is that? What is that focus now?
Well, I mean, right now I'm still trying to, you know, when God gives you something, he doesn't show you the whole picture.
it constantly clarifying and evolving. And partly depending on how you receive it and how you respond.
Right, exactly. And so I'm kind of in that stage where I'm just trying to find my footing. So
like, what do you want me to do next?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for sure, the book needs to get to as many people as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
And I want to read it. So where do you get it?
You can actually get it on Amazon or on my website, realmelissatate.com.
Okay.
On Amazon, it's also available on Kindle, and I just launched my Audible book. So if you like to listen to books instead of reading,
right?
Now available on Audible. So
I've never used that. Is that audible.com? Is that the website that does
No,
that?
You can actually just go to Amazon, so it'll show you the different options.
And they have an Audible book, and they probably have a, what do they call it? An ebook where you can download it?
Yeah. They have an ebook or a paperback, hardcover, okay, or Audible.
You've got
a lot of, what's that?
Hardcover too?
And hardcover as well.
Okay, neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I had a lot of people request the Audible. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't have time to read, but I really want to read your
sometimes
books.
So I was like, okay. Are doing other things and listening.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, you're a really inconvenient person for the power structure to have known, you know, because you're a demonstration that a lot of what they're saying is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you should be supported to the maximum. Well, everybody should buy your book.
Thank you.
And go to your website. And it'll be interesting to see what you're told to do next.
Yes.
Right.
Amen.
So, neat. Well, thanks for being here and spending the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Richard.
Hold on. We'll say goodbye in the break here.
To you. What's that?
Hold on and we'll say goodbye in the break.
Okay. Thank you.
So there goes Melissa Tate. And I think she's a great example to Americans to remember the spirit that this country was, at least in theory, started with officially, which was self-sufficiency and trust in spirit and God, and that all of our rights come from God and they can't ever be taken away. She came to America from a country that was having a lot of trouble in Africa. It was called Zimbabwe, still called that. And Zimbabwe went through a conversion to communism and suffered hyperinflation and a lot of bad things. And same stuff is starting to happen in America right now. And she came here with almost nothing and was able to make a very successful business and a successful personal life and complete an education and do all these things. And now she's standing out, not just saying that critical race theory is malicious nonsense. She's demonstrating that it's not true and has written a book called Choice Privilege Instead of White Privilege. And I haven't read it, I admit, but it sounds like a really important book and I intend to order it right away. What else do I want to say? I think the thing about Melissa is she's an outspoken example of what she believes in. And that gives so much more weight than just a belief. It's really impressive to me. And I'm sure she's been called all kinds of names for it and been demonized by various places, probably called a white supremacist and Russian agent and who knows what else. But I would recommend, while the system doesn't support her, that we should and follow what she's doing at realmelissatate.com. Her book's available on Amazon. I intend to get it there. And I think her message is just, you know, be a human. Don't believe anything's impossible, because this whole place was created from nothing but consciousness in the beginning, and anything else could be. And that's where we come from. So we should live up to it as much as we possibly can with help. That's about all I wanted to say about that show, but I hope that you'll get a lot out of it and support Melissa and get her book, keep up with her work, and stay in touch at lostartsradio.com for where our shows are, lostartsradio.com/live, especially where we're still on the air and where you can see us, and share the links, this show in particular and others too, so that you can help us get past the censorship and shadow banning and help us stay on the air if you want to. We're commercial free. There's a donate button at lostartsradio.com and also a Subscribestar link, which are both ways to help us keep going and activate some of our projects that are on hold waiting for funding. And the main message is take care of yourself, believe in yourself, where you came from, and live up to your real potential. Find out what that is and do it. Because you have massive power to heal the world. Each one of us does. And it's never been focused, but it could be. And this is a good day to start. Whatever time we have left, we should use it well. And if you take good care of yourself, get your health back, and focus your emotions and thoughts in the directions that are going to help you and respect everybody else and send out blessings instead of curses, that comes back to you immediately. And I suggest starting the experiment right now. Remember that we're on the air on Saturday with the Planetary Healing Club, and you can access that at planetaryhealingclub.com. And we'll be putting up as many other videos as we can during the week to stay in touch with you and give you a lot of free content. Lots of articles and videos posted almost every day on lostartsradio.com, and a contact form there in case you want to send us any messages or feedback from the shows or anything like that. So take good care of yourself, and we'll meet you here next time. I'll see you then.